Caroline Stephen, remember that feeling of exploring something new and reveling in the delight of the unknown? On today's episode of Talking Trading, we speak to a slightly unusual special guest. Dr. Ian Bogost is the author of Play Anything, a book which explores our notions of fun and play. Chris Tate came across his book and it made an impact on him. Bogost poses the question, what really is fun? And the answer is the discovery of something new, something novel. It's a topic we don't think that much about, but we discuss it with Bogost later in the show. But first, here's Louise Bedford in Mind Power on getting a cleaner so you have more intimacy in your life.
It surprises me how little value people place on their time. I caught up with a mentoree the other day. She is in a very well-paid position, and so is her husband. She has two children. She was in a case of overwhelm. She was too busy to think. She couldn't see the big picture. And in fact, there was almost a martyr-like quality where she was saying, there's so much to do, there's so much to do, as we have come to in this society to label the word busy with some attribution of saintliness. The thing I wanted to talk to her about was what can she delegate? There was resistance. There was an insecurity about giving up a role. But really, now that I've encouraged her to get a cleaner, to have somebody paint her walls instead of her doing it herself, to have somebody doing the wallpapering where she did not need to be spending her time doing that activity, I can tell you, she is so much happier. And guys, if you're considering getting a cleaner to help out around the house, the statistics say that women who have a cleaner actually have more time to have sex. So even if you're not going to do it for yourself, think about your woman. Think about the person who is beside you, who really doesn't have time to scratch herself. And think about the benefits to you if you help out with the housework, even by employing your way out of this situation. I think you'll find it's best to spend your time doing activities in your A game. Delegate the things that you can delegate. Focus on the things that bring out your level of genius. You'll be a happier husband, a happier wife, and definitely a happier trader.
Are you on priority notification for Chris Tate and Louise Bedford's next Repeat for Free mentor program? Well, you need to be. Register at tradinggame.com.au/priority. They'll teach you how to trade every instrument over every time frame. That's tradinggame.com.au/priority.
Hi, it's Amanda Gore, and I'm a speaker and author of Joy is an Inside Job, and I listen to Talking Trading.
Dr. Ian Bogost is an author and award-winning game designer. He is the Ivan Allen College Distinguished Chair in Media Studies and Professor of Interactive Computing at the Georgia Institute of Technology. He is the author or co-author of 10 books. Today we're talking to him about his book Play Anything, Insights into Our Notions of Fun and Enjoyment. Ian Bogost, author of Play Anything. Hello and welcome to Talking Trading.
Hello, thanks so much.
Ian, your book Play Anything was featured in the New Scientist magazine and the whole concept of it intrigued me. So I'm really happy to be interviewing you this morning all the way from New York City.
I'm glad to be here with you.
Ian, I want to talk to you about the secret of play. In your definition, what is play?
Yeah, so I think if you imagine what folks often think of when they think of play, they think of like doing whatever they want, of play being the opposite of work or of duty or of obligation. You know, play is what you get to do, work is what you have to do. those are some common conceptions, misconceptions in my mind about what play means. But for me, play is the work of working with, of manipulating something. One way of thinking of it is this is the kind of play that you deploy when you play guitar, or the play that's at work in the mechanism of an apparatus. Like there's some play in the mechanism of a steering rack, through which the wheel turns before it engages. So that idea of play is like a possibility space constructed by the limitations and constraints of a particular situation or object or person or whatever it is. And it's the work of kind of manipulating, working within that free movement that's created inside of that system. You play the guitar by accepting the strings and the fretboard and the means of holding it and the kind of music that it can produce, and then working with those to produce that music, not by rejecting it or by, swirling it around over your head, doing whatever you want with it. You have to accept the constraints and limitations of an object or a situation. And from there, you can begin playing it.
Okay, so you've said in your book that, quote, we've misunderstood fun to mean enjoyment without effort. What do you mean by that?
We tend to think of fun as this process of returning gratification or pleasure to ourselves. In truth, we don't really have any idea what fun even means when we use the word. I've argued that it's kind of like a placeholder term. How are you? I'm fine. Or, did you have a good time? We had fun. Something went right. I'm satisfied. It was good. It's like a kind of very basic assessment that seems, if anything, to suggest that you're not analyzing it even deeper and further. But for me, what fun suggests is that, in that process of manipulating and working with a material, working with an object, working with a situation, a job, a commute, a dishwasher, whatever it is, that you have, dive deep into its structure and found something new, found something unexpected, found something surprising. It could be surprising to you. It could be something that's never been found before at all. And that experience of discovery, of the discovery of something new and something familiar in particular, that's what fun is. And that means that it requires work. It requires deep work and effort to have fun. And this makes sense, actually, when you think about having a game of tennis or a night out. You have to do the work. You have to kind of commit to the experience and be present, and really be active in working with that activity before the fun can start. So it's not just pleasure or delight or kind of lightweight enjoyment. It's this kind of deep process of like mining or drilling down into something and extracting something new from it.
All right, so define the concept for us of boredom.
One of the things that's most fascinating to me about boredom is that we tend to use boredom as a place to sort of stop paying attention. Once you're bored, okay, whatever it is that I'm doing, this is no longer worthwhile. I need to find something else that gratifies me. But for me, when you have that sensation of boredom, when you feel as though there's nothing left to find, there's no novelty, you've expended all the possibilities of the situation you're in, the person whose company you're in, the job that you're in, whatever it is that you're doing, then actually that is a good sign that the fun is about to start, that if you dig deeper, that there's more play to be experienced. Because all that you've really done when you feel bored is found the edges of your previous experience. And you've confirmed, okay, I've been here before. And then if you repeat that process again and again, you remain bored because all you're doing is tracing that edge of that circle. But by pushing it a little bit further, which requires you to look again, to look deeper, to find something else to work with in that situation, then you can push beyond that boredom. And when you push beyond the boredom, by definition, right, you're going to find something novel and therefore something fun.
Define fun then for us.
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, fun is this process of discovery. Fun is novelty, the discovery of novelty.
All right. So what's created our flawed grasp of what fun is? Because I'm kind of getting that there's something about giving yourself permission.
Well, the simple answer would be selfishness. We believe that we're at the center of the universe, individually and collectively. and that, you know, something is there, something exists only to give us pleasure, or if it's not pleasure, to give us gratification or wealth or power, or in any case, to return some spoils to ourselves or our communities or whatever it is, you know. And you have to stop, you know, and realize that, well, you know, we're here, but everything else is here too, and belongs just as much. So there's a certain humility that has to be adopted in order to kind of, you know, truly and deeply play, or to truly and deeply discover novelty and fun. And that requires that you kind of stop being so worried about what your expectations are, what you brought to the table, what you already expected to get back from the situation that you're in, or the person you're with, or what have you. And instead, look at it specifically. What is this? What is this even? You know, what is my job? What is this tool that I'm working with? What does it really mean to do the dishes? And in that process, to treat it almost with this kind of ridiculous, absurdist respect, in order that you can then use that respect as a means to finding a new way, a new perspective, a new way of manipulating it.
And you mentioned something earlier about Calvinistic thinking. What did you mean by that?
Well, you know, the sense that we have of pleasure, of delight, of personal enjoyment is really bound up with guilt, you know, bound up with this kind of Judeo-Christian guilt. And we have a sense that anything that we derive pleasure from or gratification from is somehow we're guilty for, right? And that we have to restrain ourselves, we have to reject and resist, and that is the moral thing to do. And you know, by resisting or restraining, you know, I'm not going to have the piece of cake, but also I'm going to be content with my lot. Those sorts of ideas. We end up creating dissatisfaction because we're paying attention to the negative space around the scenario we're in. But kind of flip that on its head, and instead of thinking about these things that we're rejecting or resisting, then instead imagine, reorient your perspective to what you're embracing. So the opposite of that restraint is constraint or limitation. You know, what in the situation I'm in now, what is really here? And what can I manipulate and work with? What is available to me to engage with? That's the opposite of that restraint. Oh, I can only do this thing. It's rather, here are all the things that are present to me now. Now what? What do I do with them? So, you know, flipping on its head that sense of kind of constant potential dissatisfaction, which comes with this expectation that there's only some activities that are even worth doing in the first place, and the ones that I'm doing now are probably not them, but if only I could get through them and onto the good stuff, then I'd be happy. So, and then, you know, you get to the good stuff and it turns out not to be so good either, and then you're kind of waiting for the good stuff to come forever. So
true.
You have to find a way of finding something good in anything that you might encounter.
Okay, so what's the difference between, let's say, unpacking the dishwasher and lying on the couch for 10 hours watching Netflix?
Well, whatever you're doing, whatever it is at all, whatever you're surrounded by, whatever activity is, whatever individual, whatever object, the trick is in, you know, deeply accepting and treating that situation or that thing or that object as exactly what it is, and not treating it as something it's not. So if you're sitting on the couch watching Netflix, you better be like very deeply serious about your sloth and your television watching, and not think of it just as this like decompression from work, or this, you know, this process of zoning out, of vegging out in front of the TV. That it can include that. It can include the relaxation. It can include the kind of, you know, plush velvet of the seating surface and all of that. But the more attention you pay to exactly what you're doing and why, then the greater that delight and contentment would be. And likewise with the dishwasher, you know, as long as you treat it as this sort of worthless, you know, meaningless activity that you just have to get through in order that you can get to the Netflix, then you're never going to find anything worthwhile there. But if you begin to look more carefully, it doesn't take that much, right, to look more carefully at anything. Then you discover, oh, there's more here than I thought. Like, you know, how can I kind of load the glasses slightly differently so I can fit this row of cups that, you know, I always have a difficulty getting in one load. And can I and then you do that and you realize that, oh, it's making the load clean poorly, so I need to find another strategy. You know, these are almost like embarrassing things to talk about. They make you sound crazy, but in fact, that's where the delight is. The delight is in having that kind of deep attention and knowledge and engagement with something, whether it's leisure, you know, like watching TV, or whether it's chores like doing the dishwasher, or whether it's work, or whether it's family life, and so on.
And it's coming across that mindfulness is part of all of this.
Yeah, the way that I interpret the trend of mindfulness is that the importance of that attention, that kind of deep attention to the self, is all about pushing that attention out, of using your place in the world as a lens to see all the things that you're surrounded by and all those things that you might do or attend to or work with in the world outside of your head, right? So one of the ways I talk about this is through the concept of worldfulness, which is, you know, kind of a neologism that flips mindfulness on its head, that instead of being concerned about what's happening inside my own mind, I'm rather attentive to what's going on all around me. What are all the things that I'm faced with? And again, it's a kind of strange, almost weird, foolish attention, where you're just, you know, scanning and aware of all the objects and situations and people that might lead you somewhere new, that might lead you to some novelty and therefore to some fun. And that doesn't mean that they're distractions, right? It could be very central to your life, to your work, or to your home life, but you're missing them because all that you're seeing is what you've already thought of in your head.
All right, so just a couple of quick questions. Why did Mary Poppins have it all wrong?
So yeah, I'm a big critic of Mary Poppins and her lesson that we should just spread sugar on everything, that the spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. Because the moment that you spread sugar on top of something, you're hiding it. Right? I mean, literally, this is what you're trying to do. They don't want to taste the medicine, so you have to hide it with this dollop of sugar. And for me, the moment that you start hiding things, then you're just assuming that they're no good. You know, oh, if only I could get through this terrible, worthless activity, I can get on to the good one. And then you go to the good one, and you think, well, you know, this isn't so great either. I thought this job was going to be great, but now I have to drive further, or, you know, I have to do work that I didn't expect to do. So there's always going to be that sense of dissatisfaction that you could try to cover up with proverbial sugar. But you'll always be disappointed in the end. And so instead, what you must do is to treat the thing, whatever it is, as exactly what it is, not to try to turn it into something it is not. And in so doing, you force yourself to kind of do that work of drilling down, of kind of boring down into the boredom of a particular experience and to find something intrinsic to it that you haven't brought in and imported as a way of, you know, covering over its bitterness. In order to make it gratifying.
Yeah, and stimulating. That's where it...
And stimulating, yeah.
All right, so why is there terror at work in finding real fun for us human beings? What are we afraid of?
You know, the boredom example helps explain this a little bit. You know, when you're bored, it's almost like there's a signal flare that goes up. You know, it's the world telling you, okay, you've expended everything you know about this thing or this situation. And now you're entering into novel territory, and that's terrifying. That wilderness, that feeling of kind of threshing into the wilderness, is always scary. You haven't been there before, and it's like a sign, you know. Okay, now that you've experienced the terror of the new, if you press forward into it, then the delights are right on the other side. The contentment and the meaning and the gratification is right on the other side of that feeling. But often we resist that. We resist that feeling of anxiety or of fear. Or of boredom, and use it as an excuse to go do something else, anything else, right? Okay, now I'm done with this. It started to resist me. So the feeling of the world resisting you, of it not giving way, that's a good sign. It's a good sign that there's something meaningful there. There's something productive to be found behind it.
Where can people go to find copies of your book, Play Anything?
So, books should be available at your favorite bookseller, anywhere books are sold, and you can check me out at my website at bogost.com, bogost.com.
Ian Bogost, thank you very much for coming on to Talking Trading.
Well, thanks so much.
And stay tuned, guys, to hear entrepreneur Michelle Duval on the entrepreneurship surrounding us and the ideas of success. I'm Caroline Stephen. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to talkingtrading.com.au with Caroline Stephen. Make sure you are subscribed to this website to receive the very latest market views, commentary, and expert opinion. Tune in next week as we've got a bumper show planned. Bye for now.
The views represented on Talking Trading are general in nature and do not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Before acting on any of the information, consider its appropriateness in regard to your own situation.